flown, I have sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge.
Now, Clancy was a peaceful man, if you know what I mean. The cops picked up the pieces after Clancy left the scene. He never looked for trouble, that's a fact you can assume. But nevertheless, when trouble would press, Clancy lowered the boom. Oh, that Clancy! Oh, that Clancy! Whenever they got his Irish up, Clancy lowered the boom,
boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom.
O'Leary was a fightin' man, they all knew he was tough. He strutted round the neighborhood, a-shootin' off his guff. He picked a fight with Clancy, then and there he sealed his doom. Before you could shout, O'Leary, look out, Clancy lowered the boom. Oh, that Clancy, oh, that Clancy. Whenever they got his Irish up, Clancy lowered the boom,
boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom.
Now Clancy left the barber shop with tonic on his hair. He walked into the pool room and he met O'Reilly there. O'Reilly said,
for goodness sake, now do I smell perfume?
Before you could start your chew in the rack, Clancy lowered the boom. Oh, that Clancy, oh, that Clancy. Whenever they got to Irish up, Clancy lowered the boom,
boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom.
O'Houlihan delivered ice to Mrs. Clancy's flat. He'd always linger for a while to talk of this and that. One day he kissed her just as Clancy walked into the room. Before he could say the time of the day, Clancy lowered the boom. Oh, that Clancy, oh, that Clancy.
Whenever they got his Irish up, Clancy lowered the boom,
boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom. The neighbors all turned out for Cato Grady's wedding night.
McDougal said, let's have some fun, I think I'll start a fight.
He wrecked the hall, then kissed the bride and pulverized the groom. Then quick as a wink, before you could think, Clancy lowered the boom. Oh, that Clancy, oh, that Clancy. Whenever they got to the Irish up, Clancy lowered the boom. Oh, that Clancy! Oh, that Clancy! Whenever they got to the Irish up, Clancy lowered the boom.
This is Bruce Kaplan welcoming you back to another episode of Radio Masterpieces, where we scour the inventory of old-time radio each week to give you the best of the mystery thrillers. Happy St. Patrick's Day weekend to everybody. We just listened to the great Dennis Day. Wasn't he fantastic on the Jack Benny Show? And what a great entertainer he was. We're going to give you two wonderful mysteries, one from Suspense starring Robert Taylor, another one from the fantastic Whistler series, and then we're going to give you a little bit more Irish music, and we're going to end with Alan Sherman with a little bit of Jewish kind of quasi-Irish music. If you have any comments or questions for me, please don't hesitate to write to Bruce@RadioMasterpieces.com. Thank you so much for tuning in, and now let's enjoy our great shows.
It was past midnight when Jerry Coonan left the cocktail bar with a tall blonde in a mink coat. On the way out, he gave the high sign to Red Stafford and Shorty Burton, sitting idly at the bar waiting for the tip-off. And as he guided her out the front door, he could see them quietly get off their stools and prepare to leave. Jerry chuckled softly to himself. The blonde was dumb and rich. The diamond pendant around her neck ought to bring 10,000 at least. And he'd mentally appraised the square-cut emerald on her right hand at 5,000 more. Yes, the blonde was custom-built, made to order. She wouldn't talk after they'd relieved her of the jewelry. She'd be afraid her husband might find out what she'd been doing while he was out of town. He helped her into the car and fumbled with the keys until he was sure Red and Shorty had reached the other car and were ready to follow. The blonde, meanwhile, was having herself a great time.
Oh, Jerry. Jerry, I can't get over that character in the bar. Really,
I got a million of them. They come out of the cracks when I whistle.
Oh, you're precious, darling. How'd I ever get along without you?
Hey, you better be careful. You're liable to give me the fathead. Underneath it all, you know, I'm really a modest guy. Let's see. Oh, yeah. Here's where we turn.
Oh, take it easy.
Huh?
Where are we going?
Well, to the Black Cat. Isn't that where you want to go?
Yes, but...
What's the matter?
Huh? Oh, I thought the Black Cat was back the other way.
You're a little twisted, sweetheart. This is a shortcut.
But, Jerry, are you sure?
Of course I'm sure. Now, over to the left.
Look, back there. Do you suppose that other car is following us?
Oh, no.
Well, they just turned, too. Jerry, this is a blind alley.
Gosh, I guess you're right. Must have made a mistake.
They were following us.
Take it easy, pal. Stay right where you are.
Jerry, he's got a gun.
Hey, wait a minute.
Shut up. Stay right there.
Okay.
Come on, lady. Come on, Gabe. This is a stick-up.
All right, mister. You asked for it.
Down that gun, you
no,
stupid...
No, don't.
Give me that. Dumb fool.
Jerry.
Red. Red, did she...
Yeah. Shoulder. Your shorty, too.
She pulled that gun out of her bag and started shooting before I could get clear of the wheel and soccer. Shorty. Shorty, it's Jerry. It's Jerry.
What about him?
He's dead.
Better check the dame. Hurry up those shots.
Oh, yeah. Wait a minute. She's still breathing.
Pull her out of the car and leave her on the pavement. We gotta get out of here.
I can't leave her. She knows me.
All right, let her have it. Go on, you gotta shut her up.
No. No, I can't.
You got
her. I'm not gonna kill her, I tell you, Red. Listen, can you get out of here by yourself? Can you drive okay?
Yeah, I can get as far as the valley, I think. They'll take care of me at Mendoza's.
Okay. Get in the other car and get going.
What about the dame?
I'm taking her with me.
Yeah. That's where you're a little different from the others, Jerry. The blonde is a problem, and Red had the easiest answer, but you can't kill. You've always known it, that you had the quickest, sharpest head of them all. But when the chips were down, you couldn't kill. So you take the blonde with you, watching her out of the corner of your eye as you drive towards your home in the suburbs. She lies back against the seat, relaxed as if she was sleeping, and there's an ugly gash in her forehead where you hit her. 10 minutes later... Still cursing the woman's stupidity, you pull the car up the driveway and into the garage of your house. As usual, your wife, Madge, has left the doors open for you. You get out and race up the stairs to the inside door.
Madge?
Jerry, what? I just heard you come in.
Don't turn on the lights. Get something on quick. Your bathrobe, anything. Hurry.
What's the matter?
Oh, plenty. Everything went wrong. The blonde.
What happened?
Red and Shorty tailed us down the alley, but when they walked up to the car, she pulled a gun, started shooting. I had to hit her.
Where is she?
In the car, still out. Oh, where's your robe?
Right here.
Come on, we gotta hurry.
Wait a minute. Jerry, is she...
No. She's still breathing. I don't know what to do. I can't let her die.
What about the police?
I don't know. You could hear those shots for 2 blocks. Here, hold the flashlight while I take a look.
Yeah.
Just a second.
Oh, she's lying so still.
Something wrong. Madge.
Is she?
Yeah. Dead.
Jerry!
We can't take her in the house.
You better drive out on the highway.
No, not yet.
But you can't.
I can't go running around the highways tonight. Gonna need a first-class alibi when they get here.
Who?
The police. Come on, give me a hand. Gonna lock her in the turtle back. And I'm gonna call my brother. I need an alibi. Bad. Hello, Jim. This is Jerry. Yeah, you guessed it. I'm in a bad jam. I need an alibi. Tonight from about 9:30 till midnight. Yeah. Yeah, now listen, kid. If anyone asks you anything about me, tell them that Madge and I were with you and Grace till 12 o'clock. Oh, anything. Playing bridge? Yeah, that's good. Playing bridge. Right. Thanks, Jim. I'll explain when I see you.
So it didn't work out quite as you'd planned, did it, Jerry? You got the jewelry all right. and with it the body of the tall, stupid blonde woman who pulled a gun out of her purse at exactly the wrong time. Yes, it was a wrong guess, wasn't it? She wasn't made to order after all. And now she's in a position to embarrass you with the police, should one of your good friends down at headquarters get too curious and pry into the turtleback of your coupe down in the garage. Yes, dearie, you know the police are coming sooner or later. And all you can do now is wait and hope the alibi you arranged with your brother Jim will satisfy
you. I tell you, I couldn't help it, Madge. When Red and Shorty stuck us up, she pulled that silly little pearl-handled 22 out of a bag and started shooting. I had to knock her out.
Well, I don't want to say I told you so, baby.
It's a good thing. You got sense.
Oh?
I can't think of a worse time for you to open your mouth than now.
My big, strong, brilliant husband.
Now, wait a minute.
You wait a minute. Why don't you go down to headquarters right now?
Huh?
Sure, walk right in. Lock me up, fellas. I just killed the blonde. It was all an accident.
Will you shut up?
I won't shut up. If I want to say I told you so, I'll say it, because I did. I told you 1,000 times you haven't got the right kind of a brain for this. But you knew it all, didn't you? No, you never get that. You always take time and think it out. So now we've got the blonde in the turtle back, and we sit here and wait for the boys to come around and pick you up.
Let me handle it, will you?
Why? Tell me that, Jerry, why? Tin horn alibi. Do you think they'll fall for that? Had any sense, you'd drive out on the highway somewhere.
I told
right
you, I'm
now.
Not driving out in any highways. She stays right here, do you understand that? And if you don't like it, you can go, Madge.
Yeah, that's the trouble.
Huh?
It's what it always comes to when we have an argument. I can go if I want to. But I never want to.
Okay.
What's that?
Wait a minute. The police car.
I knew it.
Two cops. One of them looks like Berg of Homicide. Listen, get back into bed. Yeah. Hurry, let me handle this.
All right, Jerry. You handle it.
Better wait a minute. Who is it?
Police. Open up.
Okay, just a minute. Turn on the lights. Oh. Hello, Lieutenant.
Hello, Coonan. Sergeant Adams.
Hello.
Sergeant?
I'd like to ask you a few questions, Coonan. Mind if we come in?
Well, not at all.
Thanks. Ah, nice little place you got here.
Yeah, we like it.
Sorry to disturb you so late.
Oh, that's okay. I was just going to bed.
Yeah, I was going to say you were up a little late tonight. Just got home?
Yeah. Playing a little bridge over at my brother's place.
Jerry, who is...
Oh, come in, Madge. Yeah. This is Lieutenant Berg, my wife.
How do you do?
Sergeant Adams.
How are you?
Hello.
So you were over to your brother's, huh?
Yeah.
You won't mind if we check that.
Why not?
Shall I call him, Chief? There's a phone over there.
In a minute. Coonan, it looks like you might need an alibi.
Alibi? What am I going to do with an alibi?
Have you seen your pals, Red Stafford and Shorty Burton, lately?
Not for a couple of days. Why?
Oh, they went at the bridge party, huh? Any idea where they are now?
I wouldn't know.
Well, I'll tell you. Burton's in the morgue.
Huh?
And Stafford's at the emergency hospital getting blood transfusions.
What do you mean?
A car jumped the curb and crashed through a Signal Oil billboard about an hour ago. Stafford was crumpled over the wheel with a couple of bullets in it. Burton was sitting next to it, dead from a couple of shots.
Oh, that's awful.
Gee, I'm sorry to hear that, Lieutenant.
Yeah, tough, isn't it?
I wonder what happened.
Do you?
Yeah. Like I said.
Yeah, like you said. You were playing brick on that. You've been pals with those two birds for a long time, Coonan.
What does that mean?
Doesn't prove anything, of course, but when we found Stafford, he was still conscious, muttering to himself.
He was calling your name. That's funny, isn't it? Not so funny?
Maybe not. Maybe he wasn't talking about you. After all, there's lots of guys in this town named Jerry. Where's your gun, Coonan?
I don't own one.
Not even a little 22?
Not even a 22.
Well, I'll admit it sounds screwy asking a big he-man like you if he packs a 22, but that's what they were shot with. How about you, Mrs. Coonan?
I never owned a gun in my life.
You can search the place if you want it. You don't even need a warrant. I got nothing to hide.
Thanks. So you just got back from your brother's, huh?
That's right. A few minutes ago.
Huh? Where's your car?
In the garage.
Adams, go and have a look. Something wrong, Coonan?
No. Nothing wrong.
Go ahead, Adams.
Right.
We've been watching you three birds pretty closely since that banker was knocked off 3 weeks ago.
Red and I were in Chicago when that happened.
Yeah, I know. That's what you said. You're going to have to prove that. Oh, excuse me a minute, will you? What's your brother's phone number?
Atlantic 2204.
Thanks. Now I'll look it up. I just want to be sure I'm talking to him at his home, wherever that is. Conan James Ziff. Well, you're telling the truth so far. That's the numbers. Hello, Mr. Coonan? It's Lieutenant Berg of Homicide speaking. I'm calling you about your brother, Jerry. Have you seen him tonight? No, he's all right. There's nothing wrong. All I want to know is if you've seen him. He was there with his wife until 12. Okay, thanks. That's all I wanted to know. Good night.
See? It's like I told you.
Maybe. You had plenty of time to put him wise.
I just checked the car, Chief.
What about it?
Your hunch was wrong. Motor's still one.
Oh? Is that what you were checking? I told you I just got home.
Sure, from the bridge party.
But I found something else interesting.
Yep. What are you talking about?
Easy, Conan. Go ahead, Adams.
The ownership certificate's got Red Stafford's name on it.
Well, now, isn't that interesting?
Sure. I just bought the car from him last week. You can check with the motor vehicle department. They get the papers.
Don't worry. We'll check.
Anything else, Lieutenant?
Yeah, a lot of things. But we'll get the answers somewhere else. So far, you seem to be in the clear from shooting your pals, Conan. You're playing bridge at your brother's. You bought the car from Stafford last week. You don't own a gun. And also, you and Stafford were in Chicago 3 weeks ago when that banker was knocked off.
That's it?
I hope so, for your sake. Come on, Adam. Good night, Conan. Mr. Conan. You're free to come and go as you please, but I suggest that you don't leave town.
Okay, Lieutenant.
Night.
But sit down.
Yeah. Well, do you still think you were right in leaving her there?
Oh, that would have looked great, wouldn't it? You alone here, me out on the highway getting rid of a blonde, and the cops coming out of check. There's one thing, though.
I'd like to know it.
They don't know anything about the blonde. They're worrying about Red and Shorty and that banker, whoever he is. Wait a minute.
I knew it.
Berg had still another guy with him. There were three. He's left him outside to watch the house. We'll be followed every minute from now on. Night and day.
Yes, that's the rub, isn't it, Jerry? You got around one problem by coming directly home with a blonde in your car. But there's a tougher one now, isn't there? How can you get rid of her under the noses of the police, with a special officer following you night and day? You lie awake all night thinking about it. How, Jerry? How can you do it? Then at 10 o'clock the next morning, it comes to you.
I've got it. I've got it, Madge. Joe Mendez.
Who?
He runs a repair garage, deals in hot cars on the side. He'll do anything for money.
Sure. Yeah, if you could get another car just like mine. 39 green Chevrolet Deluxe Master Coupe.
What are you talking about?
Excuse me, honey. Got a phone call to make. Don't make any plans for this afternoon, baby. We're going bye-bye.
Don't be ridiculous, Jerry. You know we'll be followed.
Sure we'll be followed. A friend will follow us right downtown and into Joe Mendez's garage where we're going to park the car while we go shopping.
Then what?
Then we let Joe take over. Like I said, baby, he'll do anything for money.
So you called Joe Mendez. And just as you predicted, the minute you mentioned money, he was your boy, wasn't he, Jerry? Yes.
He'll arrange to have a green coupe in his garage, exactly like yours, for a fee, of course. And best of all, he'll have it there this afternoon. It's 3 o'clock when you start out with Madge on the shopping trip. And you smile to yourself as you see the police car pull out from the curb and follow you downtown. Joe is all ready for you when you arrive.
Yes, sir?
My name is Coonan. I called Mr. Mendez about having my car tuned up.
Oh, yes, Mr. Coonan. I am Mendez. You can leave it here. I'll have one of the men park it for you.
Can you have it ready in a couple of hours?
Oh, I think so. Perhaps we better go into the office. I will write up the order.
Oh, sure. Oh, Maz.
Yeah, Jerry?
Stick around. I'll be right back. Did you get the car?
Yes, yes. It's out there in the line right now.
What about this?
Take it easy. I couldn't tell him apart myself. Where's the $2,000?
Oh, here.
Don't flash it.
Hmm?
Your friend's out the front door watching us.
Yeah. Now, listen. After we leave, switch the license plates. Switch the stuff in the dash compartment, everything. Here's the ignition key.
Yeah. Well, what about the turtle bag?
Never mind the turtle bag. It's locked, and don't try to open it. Leave the key to the new car in the dash. We'll drive it home, leave mine here.
How long?
My brother will come for it later. Just leave it here and forget about it. Okay?
Okay.
See you later, Joe. We're going to take our friend out there on a shopping tour.
I'm awfully sorry, madam. I've shown you everything we have in suede handbags. Perhaps something in reptile.
Oh, yes, that's an idea. Let's see what you have in reptile.
Just a moment. I'll get them for you.
You still there?
Yeah, over by that pillar.
What about Jim?
I'll call him tonight. Have him pick up our car tomorrow. We can get rid of the blonde in a couple of days after this blows over. I got a hunch Lieutenant Berg will be around tonight to really give us the once-over again.
This seems to be the only thing we have in reptile. Would you like to look at it?
Oh, yes, I'll look at it.
So you watch the quiet man in plain clothes follow you and Madge from store to store. And finally, back to Joe Mendez's garage at the appointed time. You both walk in the door and then stand to one side, waiting.
Just a second, Madge.
What are you...
Hello, officer.
Oh.
You, enjoy the shopping trip?
Oh, almost lost you a couple of times. Where to now, sonny?
Home? Well, that's my green coupe over there. Come on, Madge.
Oh, Mr. Cooner.
Oh, hello, Mendez. Did you get her tuned up all right?
Yeah.
Good. You want to ride out with us, officer? Got room for one more.
No, thanks. I got my own car.
Okay. Well, here we are, Madge. Get in. Oh, how much do I owe you, Mendez?
$9.85.
Okay. Here you are. Thanks, and keep the change.
Well, Jerry, you're out of the woods now. The license plate's been changed, the contents of the dash compartment, everything. Yes, Mendez did a good job. An hour later, you're home, with the officer following just behind you. As you expected, Lieutenant Berg is waiting for you when you arrive.
Waiting for me, Lieutenant?
Yeah, been out for a little ride.
You ought to know. We've been tailed everywhere we went.
Okay, Coonan, I'll call off the bloodhounds. Just dropped by to tell you that Red Stafford died an hour ago.
Oh, that's too bad.
He regained consciousness just before he went. He said you weren't mixed up in that shooting last night.
Anything else?
Yeah, something about a scrape with a woman they tried to stick up. Said she pulled a gun and then drove off after the shooting.
I see.
Can't understand why she didn't report it, though.
It's funny, isn't it?
Another thing, the business about that banker. You really were in Chicago with Stafford.
Well, so now you believe me.
I'd know better than to believe you, Coonan. But Stafford had the proof. Or I think he had.
Huh?
Let's go inside. I'll tell you about it.
Is it important?
It's your neck.
That's important. Come on inside.
Well, you're pretty proud of yourself, aren't you, Jerry? Joe Mendez was a real inspiration. The blonde is resting quietly now on the turtleback of your car back in Mendez's garage. And the substitute car outside is all ready for Lieutenant Byrne, if he happens to get curious. You glance slyly at Madge, wink at her as you escort the lieutenant into your living room. He starts to sit down and then decides to stand.
You had us go out for a while, Conan. Oh, yeah, I guess I better do my checking first.
Checking?
Yeah, I'm a kind of a cynic. That's so I don't believe anything anymore. Stafford said while the two of you were in Chicago, he signed some kind of a legal paper before a notary.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember I witnessed it before.
Yeah, well, that's the proof I was talking about. For some reason, Stafford stuck it in a little valise.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing, except he tossed the valise in the turtleback of his car and forgot about it.
Turtleback?
Yeah. Is it still there?
Oh, no. That is that. I don't think it's there. I never noticed it.
Huh. But you wouldn't mind if I checked?
No, but I wouldn't mind if you checked. Here. One of these two keys. Help yourself.
Thanks.
I will.
Hello?
Jerry? Jerry, this is Joe Mendez.
Mendez, listen, I can't talk now. Call
me. But this is important.
It'll keep. I got things to do.
But listen, I'm trying to tell you. There was a cop hanging around the place all the time you were shopping. I didn't get a chance to change the license plates.
You do. Wait a minute. What are you getting at?
I'm saying I didn't make the switch. You still got your own car.
Mrs. Murphy's chowder. Nobody spoke, so he shouted all the louder. It's an Irish trick, that's true. I can lick the mix, that's true. The overhaul that Mrs. Murphy's chowder.
Mrs. Murphy gave a party about a week ago. Everything was plentiful, well, the Murphys, they're not slow. They treated us like gentlemen, we tried to act the same. Only for what happened, it was an awful game. Mrs. Murphy dished the chowder out and fainted on the spot. She found a pair of overalls at the bottom of the pot. Tim Nolan, he got ripping mad, his eyes were bulging out. He jumped upon the piano and loudly he did shout. Go through the overhauls and Mrs. Murphy's chowder.
Nobody spoke, so he shouted all the louder.
It's an Irish trick, that's true. I can lick some nick the crew.
The overhauled and Mrs. Murphy's chowder.
They dragged the pants from out the stoop and laid them on the floor. Each man swore upon his life he'd not seen them before. They were plastered up with mortar and were worn out at the knee. They had their many ups and downs as we could plainly see. When Mrs. Murphy, she came to, she starts to cry and pout. He'd had them in the wash that day, forgot to take them out. Tim Nolan, he excused himself for what he said that night. So we put music to the words and sung with all our might. Put through the overhaul in Mrs. Murphy's chowder.
Nobody spoke, so he shouted all the louder.
It's an Irish trick, that's true. I can lick the mix, that's true.
The overhaul in Mrs. Murphy's.
Valley 103.1.
And now, with 4 hours to kill and the performance of Mr. Robert Taylor, once again to keep you in suspense.
So you want to know what's the matter, what's wrong with me? Okay, sit down on that bench over there. Make yourself comfortable, because this takes a while to tell, and I want to get it all off my chest. You know, now that it's over, I can look back and see everything in perspective. clear back to the days when my brother Walter and I were kids in Vermont. And I can see now that my life's divided into two halves. The first 34 years and the last 4 hours. Yeah, 4 hours ago, I was standing at the big front door of the Bachelor's Club on my way up to see Walter for the first time in 5 years. I knew it was going to be tough, but things had changed since the last time we were together. Walter thrived now. He was the kind of New York lawyer who divides his time between the front page and the society section. I was just still a newspaper bum. The competition between us was over, and I was hoping that now, with the numbers up on the scoreboard for everyone to see, Walter might let down a little. Besides, he could afford to call off whatever it was that had set us at each other's throats from the beginning. Anyway, that's what I hoped. As I said, I knew it would be tough. Asking Walter for anything was always tough. Well, I finally swallowed what pride I had left and walked into the lobby. At the desk next to the stairway, the clerk was in a huddle with a bellboy. One of those clubs where you're supposed to put a call through the desk before going upstairs. I stood around waiting for a minute, then figured it might be better if Walter didn't know I was coming, so I walked past him. They didn't even see me.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, Larry. Starting tomorrow, someone else is going to
take care of Walter. But it was Walter. With a load of martinis. He should have stopped right then, turned around, and walked out. It's my exit cue. But I must have. Well, nothing can change that now. Anyway, I walked on up to the second floor and down the hall to 206.
Well, it's about time you got here. Well,
Hello, Walter.
Yeah, Theodore.
That's right.
Big brother Theodore. Well, come on in. You're just in time for dinner. The boy will be up in a minute.
No, no, thanks, Walter. I haven't got too much time.
Huh? You mean you're turning down a free meal?
Oh, look, let's forget that stuff, shall we? We're grown up now. There's no
sure,
point.
Sure. Now, sit down.
No, I won't be too long.
Huh? Well, tell me, Ted, how are things on the paper in Buffalo?
Okay, I guess. I quit yesterday.
Oh, you quit?
Yeah.
Not fired. You quit.
That's what I said.
So, now you're out of a job and you figure that I'll...
Wait a minute, Walter. Let me tell you all of it. There's a guy I met in the service, Dan Allenby. He's down in Florida now, Fort Lauderdale. Look, here's a letter I got from him. He's buying a paper there, a little country sheet, 8 pages, twice a week. He wants me to go in with him. Nothing big, Walter, but it's the kind of thing I've been looking for years. We can do something down there. The place is growing. We can double the circulation in 6 months. Dan's got all kinds of ideas, and so have I. He says that... What's the matter?
Huh?
What's so funny?
You.
I don't get it.
All right, how much, Ted?
Well, the price was $10,000. I'll need half of it.
$5,000.
That's right.
Same song, 80 seconds verse.
I'm not begging, Walter.
Oh, what is it, then?
I'm asking you for a loan. I'll sign a note. Well, what about it?
What happened to your pride, Ted?
I thought we agreed to forget
I didn't agree to anything. You not only lost what pride you haven't even got any good sense.
That answers my question.
Good for a laugh, though. Big brother Theodore crawling up on his belly to...
Shut up, Walter.
$5,000. You thought I just...
I said shut up.
Hey, let go of me.
I've had all of you I'm going to take. You hear that, Walter?
Let go of me.
Okay, Walter. Okay. You've had that coming for a long time, Walter. Yeah, you're right. I was stupid thinking you'd... Now, get up. Come on, Walter, get up. I won't bother you anymore. Walter. Walter. I saw it when I turned him over. A stream of blood oozing out of his right temple where he'd hit his head on the corner of the hearth. No pulse. No breath. Walter was dead. In a spot like that, you don't think. You move. No one knew I was in New York. I was sure the clerk and the bellboy hadn't seen me cross the lobby. If I could get out without being spotted, I had a chance. I picked up the letters from Allenby, went to the door and put my handkerchief over the knob. Turned back to give the room a last look before I left. That's when I saw it. The telephone receiver was off the hook. I remember I looked down at it like it was a poisonous snake or something. Started to hang it up, then changed my mind. Hello?
Walter?
Yeah, this is Walter.
Really?
Sorry, I kept waiting so long.
Wait a minute. I have an understanding right now. When I want a good newspaper man, I'll call you. When I want impersonations, I'll go see the floor show at Leon and Eddie. Now, why don't you call your brother and tell him I'm getting tired of holding this telephone?
Who'll I say is calling?
You know, I made that pretty clear just before you barged into his apartment.
What makes you think I barged in?
Just a guess. Am I warm?
Not very.
In this end, the dialogue sounded more like a Donnybrook than a pink tea.
Well, look, let's not go into...
I apologize, Theodore. Walter's a class A heel. He had it coming. Now, I'll go pick him up off the floor or wherever you left him and bring him to the phone.
Well, he's out of the apartment right now. Why don't you just give me your name and number and I'll...
He already has it. I gave it to him a year ago in a moment of weakness. Tell him I'll call him back in an hour or so when he's better...
Hold it a minute.
Dinner, Mr. Pomeroy.
Listen, Walter won't be back till late tonight. You'd better call him at his office in the morning, Nick.
Yes, but he wanted
to... Mr. Pomeroy?
If I'd had any sense, I'd have given up right then with the bellboy pounding on the door, with that girl on the phone who could send me to the chair with a word. But as I said, in a spot like that, you don't think. Something else takes over.
You went there, Mr. Pomeroy?
I had to get my hands on that girl. I knew he'd have her number written down somewhere. But there was nothing on the telephone stand. Nothing in the drawers but a couple of bridge score pads and some other junk. I wiped the knobs of the handkerchief and turned back to put it again, searching his pocket. The bellboy was rattling some keys outside when I found it. A little brown, leather-covered book with some names and numbers in it. I jumped toward the door, slid behind it just as it opened.
Mr. Pomeroy, I knocked and I saw... Holy God! Larry! Larry!
The minute he turned the corner, I took off for the back stairway. The pack was beginning to howl up front when I left for the rear door. Still unseen, safe. Except for that girl. I found a phone booth in a Fifth Avenue drugstore and took out the memo book. He'd scribbled first names and phone numbers on four or five pages. The rest of it was blank. No addresses, nothing else to go on. About a dozen of them belonged to women. So I started on number one. Anna Lee had a Murray Hill number.
Hello?
Is this Murray Hill 41121?
That's right.
Is Joanne there, please?
Joanne? I'm sorry, I don't know any Joanne. You must have the wrong number. Are you sure?
Well, I guess I'd better check it again. I'm sorry.
Now, Louise's name, if you're that guy who's been calling her, let me tell you right now.
You say you're making a survey? Well, my little old head isn't much good at figures, but I'll surely be glad to help you all. I've got...
Is this Maxine?
That's right. Who's this?
Didn't I talk to you a little while ago?
Who? Oh. Don't tell me, Theodore.
Make it Ted, would you?
Oh, we're real friendly now.
I hope so.
Right. And you make a habit of hanging up in people's faces?
You were cut off, Angel, and you were so snide about giving me your name, I couldn't call you back.
So you went out and bought yourself a pistol ball?
No. I just called up every girl in Walter's telephone index until you answered. Because I want to see if the girl is as nice as the voice.
I just like your default.
Look, why don't you save us both a lot of trouble by telling me where I can meet you?
I'd rather keep it this way.
I can be pretty persistent.
I can be pretty stubborn. One Pomeroy is about all I can cope with at a time. I'm awfully sorry, Theodore, but I...
Wait a minute. What's that music? The radio?
No, it's not the radio. And please don't bother me. You're a nice boy, but I'm too busy right now to play games.
Look, you've got to at least give me your last name, Maxine.
Hi, Theodore. Some other time.
But wait.
I'm sorry, pal. You forced me to do this.
Maxine, wait a minute. Would you tell me if you have a party by the name of Thomas P. Sherman at Plaza 22376?
Thomas P. Sherman. S-H-E-R-M-A-N.
That's right. Plaza 22376.
One moment, please.
I looked at my watch. 9:00. I could close my eyes and see that hotel room now. Jammed with the boys from the police beat, crowding around the medical examiner, grabbing for the phone, shooting questions at the lieutenant in charge.
Hello, sir.
Yes?
Has no record of a Thomas P. Sherman at Plaza 22376.
Oh, well, who is listed at that number?
I'm sorry, sir. We do not give that information.
What about the address of the number?
I'm sorry, sir.
Look, I've got to have it, operator. It's very urgent.
One moment. I'll connect you with a supervisor.
No. Oh, give it. I started to get panicky then. Got a lot of wild ideas about running, grabbing the next plane for anywhere. But I fought it down. I'd been a reporter long enough to know what happens to guys who run. I had to get that girl. I had to. Yeah?
You throw it a pond?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, thanks, pal. I gotta get a hold of a little woman, you know. The more I explain to her now, the less I'll have to do when I do get home. Boy, they're sure going all out in that Legion parade, ain't they?
Yeah. Parade. Excuse me.
Yeah, sure. What's the matter?
What was that you said about a parade?
Legion parade coming up Fifth Avenue. Crosstown traffic is tied up for 2 hours.
Coming by here?
Yeah, the band is down the street now.
Band? That's what I heard.
Huh?
Nothing. Thanks a lot. Crowds were lining the curbs outside. Down the avenue, somewhere around 78th Street, I could hear the band at the head of the parade, marching toward us. The same band I'd heard over her telephone, passing so close it almost covered her voice. She was on a low floor, next to the street, and the band had passed her at exactly 9:01. I remembered looking at my watch. I stood there and waited for the band. It was a wild idea, but I had a feeling if I figured it carefully, I could come pretty close. I walked a block with the band, then another one to make sure. It took them 1:20 to cover a block. We hit 84th Street at 16:20 past 9. They covered exactly 13 blocks since they passed her telephone. That made it somewhere around 71st Street, on a ground floor. An apartment, maybe a residential hotel facing Central Park. I turned and started running back down Fifth Avenue. I was getting close. And there were still 2 hours before the morning papers hit the street. Next hour and a half, I checked Fifth Avenue for 2 blocks on either side of 71st, going over nameplates and apartment doorways. There were 2 Maxines. I talked to one on the house phone. He must have been 70. And met the other one face to face, a hatchet-faced character who didn't appreciate being gotten out of bed by a drunk who had the wrong apartment. That left only one possibility. A residential hotel in the middle of the block. I decided I'd try calling her again. Walked past the cigar stand in the lobby to a row of phone booths at the rear. 10:50. Time was running out.
Hello.
Hello, Maxine.
Here we go again. What is it this time, Theodore?
Well, I'm still trying to wear you down.
Because you like my voice.
Right.
You think I'm charming. Practically, you're just...
Right. And another thing.
What?
I think you live in the Grayson Arms on Fifth Avenue.
Wrong. I live on the other side of town.
Wait now. Be honest with me, Angel.
Hold it a second, will you?
She was lying. She knew what it was all about and was playing with me. The panic came back. I looked across the marble floor of the lobby toward the cigar stand. A customer was standing there. A girl had appeared behind the counter to wait on him. Then he left and another guy came in. My heart stopped. It was the distributor with a bundle of morning papers. My mind was paralyzed. It didn't sink in. Not even when I saw the girl turn away and pick up the phone.
Oh, let's see. Where were we, Theodore?
You were stringing me along about living on the other side of town. Listen, Maxine, you've got to...
Hello? Ted, are you there?
Sorry. Maxine, have you got the time?
Oh, just a second.
I saw the girl put down the phone, hold her watch up toward the light.
5 to 11.
When are you through work?
Right now. I was
working. Stay put for a minute and I'll tell you.
Ted, what do you mean? Stay put a minute. Hello.
I'll be right with you, sir. Hang on, Ted. Yes, sir.
Package of those, huh?
Yes, sir. 18:25. Thanks. Anything else?
That's up to you.
Oh, now look.
Wait a minute. I told you I was a persistent type.
Why, you're Ted.
Disappointed?
Hey, not exactly. How did you find...
I was calling from the booth over there.
But how did you find it?
My crystal ball.
Oh, you ought to get yourself a booth at the county fair. You'd make a fortune.
It's only a sideline. Do you really live across town?
A worse-looking brownstone on 75th. But it's home.
Good, then I can walk you home.
Walter won't like this.
He won't mind.
Okay, Theodore, I'm with. Let me lock up and get my things. I'll be with you in a minute.
I waited while she shut things down, threw a tweed coat over his shoulders, put a blue felt hat with a feather in it on the back of her head. The face matched the voice. Dark hair, wide-set blue eyes with laugh wrinkles at the corners. I wasn't thinking about that then. For thinking what a break it was, she lived across town on the other side of Central Park.
Ted?
Huh?
Mind if I mention something?
No, go ahead.
We're going the wrong way. Main path across the park down there.
Yeah, I know. I just don't want to meet any cops. The park's closed after nightfall, you know. You don't mind?
No, I don't mind.
At the last minute, she grabbed the paper off the pile, folded it, and stuck it in her pocket without looking at it. We turned into a dark byway. She moved closer and took my arm. The paper pressed against me like a hot branding iron in my side. My heart was pounding now. There was a choking lump in my throat. I hardly dared to talk.
I'm sorry I gave you such a bad time tonight, Ted.
Forget it.
I thought you'd be different. More like your brother. Why are we stopping? Why did you do it?
What do you mean?
You can let your hair down. Walter can't hear it.
Why did I do what?
You mean you do this every night?
Huh?
Call up strange women. Tell them you've fallen in love with their voices.
Well, let's not talk about that now.
I don't get it.
Look, man. I'll tell you later.
Never mind. I just thought it was worth mentioning. I guess I was wrong. Good night, Ted. I can make it the rest of the way alone.
No, wait.
I mean it. Let go of me.
Go quiet, my Tina, the cop, you'll hear it.
I don't care.
Hey! Anyone up there?
I held her tight. My lips hard against hers. I heard the cop walk by on the main path 50 feet away. There in that dark byway, I could have done it. 10 seconds, maybe 20, and it would be over. I'd be free. But I discovered something else. I felt her respond, felt her arms tighten around me. I said it before, back in that room with Walter's body at my feet. I stopped thinking. Something else took over. I was like an animal fighting for life, going on nerve an instant. But there in that black pathway in the park, I began to think again like a human being. And I knew that whatever it is that's born into a murderer wasn't in me. That lover or hater, I could no more murder this girl in cold blood than I could fly to the moon.
Well, Here's the 8th Avenue entrance.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell me, Ted? Something's tearing you to pieces. I can see it.
Okay. You've got a morning paper in your coat pocket. Take a look at it.
Paper? What's that got to do?
Here, give it to me. Page one. Sign yours. Lawyer attacked in city apartment.
Oh.
Yeah. You asked me. Here it is. New York, January 18th. Bruised and bleeding after an attack by a mysterious visitor into his rooms at the Bachelor's Club early last night, Walter Pomeroy... Wait a minute.
Go on.
Walter Pomeroy, noted criminal lawyer, still refused to disclose the identity of his assailant. Dr. James Penrose, attending physician, said Pomeroy suffered a possible concussion from a severe blow on the head, but was otherwise progressing nicely and would be released from city hospital in 24 hours. The attack came...
Severe blow on the head.
Yeah, he fell. Listen. Listen, Maxine. This doesn't tell at all. There's something else.
Then what is the matter?
Okay. So you want to know what's the matter? What's wrong with me? Okay, sit down on that bench there. Make yourself comfortable, because this takes a while to tell. That's it. That's what's wrong. I wanted you to know all of it because you're important to me now, maybe more important than anything else in the world. You can check out if you want to.
It's nothing a cup of coffee won't cure. There's an all-night stand around the corner. Got 20 cents.
I sell a line of plastics, and I travel on the road, and I have a case of samples, which, believe me, is a load. Every night a strange cafe, a strange hotel, and then early in the morning, I am on the road again. When the season's over and my lonesome journey ends, that's the only time I see my family and my friends. I drive up Ocean Parkway, and before I stop the car, my ma leans out the window and she hollers, "Here we are! Shake hands with your Uncle Max, my boy, and here is your sister Cheryl, and here is your cousin Isabel, that's Irving's oldest girl. And you remember the Tishman twins, Gerald and Jerome. We all came out to greet you and to wish you welcome home. Meet Merowitz, Barrowitz, Handelman, Shandelman, Sperber and Gerber and Steiner and Stone, Moskowitz, Lupowitz, Aronson, Berenson, Kleinman and Feynman and Friedman and Cohn, Smolowitz, Wallowitz, Teitelbaum, Mandelbaum, Levin, Levinsky, Levine and Levi, Brumberger, Schlumberger, Minkus and Thinkus and Stein with an E-I and Stein with a Y. Shake hands with your Uncle Sal, mine boy, and here is your brother Sid, and here is your cousin Yetta, who expects another kid. Whenever you're on the road, mine boy, wherever you may roam, we'll all be here when you come back to wish you well.
have sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. The door is slowly closing for Radio Masterpieces, but be sure and tune in again next week from 9 to 10 p.m. to listen to more wonderful mysteries from the 1940s and 50s. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.